This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
We are now live here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram. Here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Get a hold of me pretty much 24/7. You can always reach me anytime you have a question, any problems with your pets. Now is the time. Well, it's always a time because I've been concierge my entire career and I'm not stopping now. So anyway, I know when I lecture interestingly about this, about how I am always available for my clients, literally my colleagues think I'm nuts. You actually give your cell phone to your clients? They go, yeah. I mean, the animals don't have a clock in their own and say, well, I'm going to get sick between 8 and 5 every day. I mean, it happens all the time. So I am there for them. Bruce, how are you? How are you? Just talked to Martin the other day. We were basically giving you praises. And I think he's doing a good job. So anyway, how to get a hold of me? Well, it's very, very easy. Good morning from above the Rose Bowl. Hello, Sharon. That's great. So anyway, here on Instagram, you're here. So all you have to do is just start typing away your questions and I'll be happy to answer. Here on Pet Life Radio, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Just, you know, punch in your questions or give us a live call. We'd love to hear from you as well. And I'm waving hello to everybody. Hope everybody had a great week. And for those who know what a sukkah is, I've been eating in mine. And that might, I don't know how many of you even know what that is. But anyway, we're here. So anyway, you want to get a hold of me, just please join in. Steph, how are you doing? And I'm loving to say hello to all these people. Love it. Now, for Raven, Sky, and me, you have a request to be live, which is totally fine. But I've just a lot of times hit that button or accidentally. I'm going to review the request. I'm going to okay it. And if you don't get go live, we'll see if you really want to talk. Sometimes Janice from San Antonio. How you doing, JB? So anyway, I just wave back at you. If you want to go ahead and institute that live, I'm fine with that. And hey, there you go. Good morning. How are you? Was this a mistake button? Anyway, if you want to go, since you got me here, go ahead and ask your question. We'll answer, and then we can say goodbye. What's going on? Okay, so what happens is this is very, very interesting. And by the way, for those of you that are potentially young moms and have pets first, which of course I'm a big fan of, and planning to have kids, here's a couple of tricks. First of all, your resident dog was Kingpin. He or she was the king of the household. And now all of a sudden, you bring another dog in. All right. And they're going, oh my God, this is competition. So we often make a big mistake. This is also when bringing a new baby in. So we have to make the new pet basically a positive, not a negative. How do we do it? Well, for one thing, the biggest mistake we always make. So what happens is, when the new dog is asleep or is resting or in its crate, however you're training, so what do? Now you feel so guilty for having brought another pet into the household. You already see the resentment. So what do? You pour on the attention to the resident dog. So what are you just teaching the resident dog? You're teaching the resident dog that life, in fact, is better without that new pet. Ah. So we kind of inadvertently create this battle between young and old, or new and not so new, new and old. So here's what you do. When they're together in the same room at the same time, you give more attention to the resident dog and give treats, good boy, good girl, whatever the case may be. And then when the new dog is in its crate or is separated, kind of not meanly ignore, but just don't give as much attention to the resident dog. You save the resident dog, right? The attention for when the new pet is around or when the new baby is around. We make the biggest mistake when it comes to babies, because what happens is the baby's napping, the baby's asleep. We feel so guilty that we brought a new being into the house that's taking away the attention. We pour on the attention and the affection to the resident dog. Well, that's counterintuitive. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is only give a lot of attention to the old, the resident dog, when the new dog or the new baby is around. So try that. Try, don't, not mean, just don't give as much attention. But when the new puppy, when the new poodle is around, you shower a lot of the affection and attention onto the resident dog. And that way, the dog, the resident dog, will not only feel like this competition, they're going to want that new dog around. Oh my God, every time that new dog is around, I'm getting my favorite treat. I'm getting some time. I'm getting hugs and kisses. That's how you want to do it. So try that, see if that works, and then get back to us and let me know. You're welcome. All right, bye-bye. All right, so those of you who are planning on having children, this might be a good thing for you. So you'll learn from these questions, because this is, you know, typically the way it's done. Todd, how you doing? All right, Trin, be legendary. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anybody. I have a lot of people here. Good. I want some get some good questions. So what I had a case over the weekend, and I want to just kind of talk about how the difference between young and old, and I guess I can qualify as the latter, and that is that the difference between knowledge and wisdom. So I sent a client of mine, another MD, a physician actually, to emergency. We were having some issues with his dog. And I just wanted to make sure everything was okay. They were concerned. I said, you know what? I was a larger dog about bloat, just from the behavior. But they kept telling me, and he's a doc, so he knows, the belly was nice and soft. It wasn't bloated. So I'm thinking, well, it's probably not bloat. But you know what? It's late at night. Just to be safe, let's get an x-ray. So they take the dog, they take a little blood test, they take an x-ray, and it turns out that there's some issues with the chest. But also when they did a blood test that was low, one of the things we look at is phosphorus, it was low phosphorus. And this young doctor starts talking about something called Fanconi syndrome. And Fanconi syndrome is something, it's a very rare disease. And the fact that you even brought it up, I was surprised, because I think in my 42 years of practice, I have never seen a Fanconi dog. So, I mean, we're talking really rare. Remember, we always talk about the difference between the common and the uncommon, and we talk about the horse versus the zebra. And any medical doctor knows, and we use this all the time, and, you know, something that people can really understand. And I say, like, if you're running along the beach in Malibu, and you hear hoofbeat chasing you from behind, are you thinking horses or zebras? And of course, you can say, Malibu, California, horses. So young experienced doctor with no wisdom, why are you possibly thinking about a zebra? So that's kind of where it is. So when he wrote me after the visit, he texted me back and he said, they think it's Fanconi syndrome. I'm going, whoa, that's out of left field. And so anyway, we talked this morning, dog is doing much better. It's has a mild pneumonia. That's more likely. It was a breathing issue, and he was shaking. She was kind of uncomfortable. And that makes sense. They put her on two really good antibiotics. I agree with both of them. And, you know, that's it. I said, I'm not worried about anything so rare. I mean, literally in my 40 years, I don't think I've ever diagnosed it. I mean, and even if you look it up online, the first thing it says, a very rare condition. It's just like, really, young doctor, you think you're in practice for 6 months and you're going to get one? I remember, this is really funny, talking about inexperience. I'm guilty of that too. So my early years of practice, I see this dog coming in, and it was hairless and had a very kind of greasy skin, had a bloated belly. Now my mind, oh my God, if you look up some of the symptoms of Cushing's disease, I'm thinking, oh my God, here I'm in practice for a month, not even a month, and I'm getting my first Cushing's case. So I asked her, I said, how long has this been going on? And she goes, what's going on? And I said, well, there's the bloated belly, the hair loss, the skin. She goes, I'll have you know, this is a Chinese crested. You know, there are only four in California. And I'm thinking to myself, well, no wonder why I never knew what it was. I've never even seen one. And yeah, you heard about the Mexican hairless, but a Chinese crested. I mean, this is very early in my career. Never saw one at Davis in that school. Never, I mean, in the month, here I am thinking, oh my God, this is so cool. I'm seeing this really unconditional, this unusual. And by the way, Cushing's is way more common than Fanconi syndrome. But anyway, the fact is that it would even cross my mind. And I don't think she ever liked me, because I didn't know what one of the four in California Chinese crested were. But anyway, if you know, look up. And there's also the Powder Puff Chinese Crested, which has kind of some hair, but this one was classic Chinese Crested. So anyway, it does happen, but we learn. You know, that's how we learn. All right, let's see. I want to wave. Give me some questions, guys. By wrist, you notice. So I thought I talked about it. All right. Anyway, for those of you who weren't here last week, I play basketball every Tuesday night. I am, yes, by far the oldest guy on the court, you know, 70, almost 71. And I'm playing against guys that are in the 30s and 40s. And I still love to play. And I'm running, chasing a sort of a free ball, right? So, and I'm running along with one of my opponents. And I think in the run, we tripped on each other and I went, not falling, I went flying. So I kind of, to break my fall, I put my hand underneath me to help, you know, say break the fall. And I guess my wrist was in some weird way, hurt like hell. My hand got almost instantly swollen. Of course, I finished playing that night because heaven forbid I should stop. And I iced it and ibuprofen and all that stuff. Anyway, I noticed within a day, it was so swollen that when I made a fist, you couldn't even see my knuckles. It was all puffy. Anyway, so I treated for a couple of days, all the good things. Swelling went down. I felt better. And of course, the next Tuesday night I played, the Tuesday after the night I played. But one thing I noticed is that my thumb, when I can hyperextend it, instead of going back like this, it went back like that. And a little bone or something popped up right here. And when I pushed it, my thumb would go back in. After back, I pushed it. And as I did that, I also noticed some what we call crepitus, kind of a bone-on-bone feeling. Anyway, long story short, showed it to my friend who happened to be a hand surgeon. And he looks and he goes, yep, you tore your volar plate. So, I mean, basically, it's all of the tendons and ligaments right here that keep the thumb where it's supposed to be. Went in for surgery 2 Fridays ago. This last Friday was 2 weeks after surgery. He then rechecked and put this hard cast on. I had a soft cast with a plate just to keep my thumb honest. Anyway, so I'm on this for another 2 or 3 weeks. So anyway, I feel fine. I know I'm using it way more than I'm supposed to. I am the worst patient ever. Now I know what it's like when I tell my clients, who I tell them, don't let your dog run up and down stairs, and all of a sudden they come in and the lip is still there. And I say, well, are you to confine it like we wanted? No stairs, no long walks, just short control leash walks. They go, well, you still go to the backyard. I go, no. So finally, what I do, I recommend, let us keep the dog. We'll board it for 5, 6 days where they're what's called cage rest. And I mean now, literally cage rest. P.S. What happens? Dog gets better. So I am that kind of patient. I'm the worst ever. When I had my shoulder done, same thing. I went back to work 2 days later doing surgery. So I don't practice what I preach. Let's put it that way. But anyway, so I'm sure that my friend Robbie, the hand surgeon, is going to be yelling at me. But so far, it looks pretty good. So I'm good. All right. My English bulldog gets cysts in her toes. Gave her a steroid, went away. Now I came back. What should I do? Okay. We are talking about interdigital cysts. And interdigital cysts are very, very common. Probably the 2 breeds that we most often see it are going to be your English and your French bulldog. It can happen in any dog, but it's very common in bulldogs. Sometimes they are fluid filled. Sometimes we can drain them. Sometimes, rarely, we actually surgically remove them. And that is if they keep coming back. So yes, they are antibiotic and steroid responsive. I do the antibiotics too, because I'm worried about secondary infection. Certainly the steroids help. And what you can do about it? Not a whole lot. There are very few things you can do. It is just the nature of the beast. And I mean, when it comes to bulldogs, I mean the beast literally. So, do the steroids when you can. If you have one area particularly that continues to come back or they get extremely huge and maybe even somewhat infected, then you might consider removing it. Otherwise, you try to manage them medically. I prefer medical management any time of the week, but I just know that rare cases we will actually do surgery. I don't like doing the surgery. Sometimes even with surgery, they can come back. So I like to beat very conservatively and go from there. Anyway, we are almost 20 past the hour. Time for my break. When I get dirty looks from my producer, Mark, I know it's time to run commercials on Pet Life Radio. So don't go away. We'll be back after these short messages from Pet Life And I will stay here on you guys on Instagram, but we'll be back for everybody in just a minute. Don't go away.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we are back here live. We had a good question about on that poodle case we discussed earlier. Is there any way to tell other than teeth? And there is, unfortunately, eyes, yes, but there's a span between like 4 and 7 years. It's just a guess. If they are starting to get a little white, then maybe they're closer to the 7, as long as their eyes are still clear. Once the eyes start getting sclerosis, then it kind of tells you they're probably 7 or more. All right, Shannon. Talk about tapeworm. Instead of the first time in foster dog recently, they came from the shelter. So understand something about tapeworms. Tapeworms, unlike the other worms, cannot be spread from dog to dog because of the actual feces. Very important to know. Tapeworms come from eating a flea. Now, could the flea from the rescue dog jump on to the resident dog? The resident dog now eats the flea and gets tapeworms? Yes, that can happen. Now, the tapeworms you see in dogs, like Dipolidium, are not like Echinococcus, not the dreaded African tapeworm that robs the body of nutrition and makes you very, very sick. When it comes to Dipolidium, probably the only real issue is aesthetics. Aesthetics, because when you look at the poop, you see these little white rice flakes on the poop. And if you lift up the tail, you see dried up tapeworm segments. They look almost like they drop, they shrink, they look like sesame seeds. Those are the ones that we have to worry about. But, and again, not, it doesn't cause any medical issue. It causes an issue where it looks pretty gross. So if you have a resident dog, you take care of the fleas on your new dog, you don't have to worry about the tapeworms passing from the new dog, the rescue dog, to the resident dogs. That's not going to happen. Fleas, yes, but no. So when you see tapeworms, the first thing you need to do, interestingly, is not just treat the fleas. I mean, treat the worms, which is easy, but it's also treating the fleas. You got to get rid of the fleas. Once you get rid of the fleas, the tapeworms won't come back. Now, the tapeworms, a number of ways. There are, you know, some of the Panicure can treat, has something for the tapeworms. The drug you're looking for is praziquantel. Praziquantel is in Drancit, is in Drontol, and that's the medication you want to talk to a veterinarian about, and that takes care of the tapeworms. I recommend, some say that one treatment is all you need. I like to follow up just to be sure, 14 to 17 days later, giving a second dose. And that can help. If you wait too long, as with other worms, then they may also reproduce. And those take now, oh, one more thing you have to know, that tape most, when we make a diagnosis of worms, roundworms, hookworms, gripworms, we do a fecal test. We are looking for the eggs, the worm eggs, and we make our diagnosis based on that. With tapeworms, it could be different because tapeworms, they have egg packets and they shed the worms, but they may not shed the egg packets. So you can bring your stool sample in of your pet that you see, you're actually seeing these worms. And the doctor says, well, the fecal is negative because they don't shed eggs readily. There's egg packets. So the fecal test could be negative, but you're seeing the worms. You're seeing them. So the owner comes in and says, what do you mean negative? They're worms, I see them. So understand, when it comes, your diagnosis is, I always tell people, you can make the diagnosis better than I can, because you are seeing the tapeworm larva on the body, coming out on the stool, drying up on the butt. You treat for tapeworms, regardless of what the fecal test shows. So keep that in mind. So don't get mad at your doctor who you spend money on. I honestly, if you have an adult dog where it's unlikely for them to have any other worms, not impossible, but unlikely, especially if the stool is totally normal except for seeing the tapeworm larval segments, okay? When you see the segments, I will treat for tapeworms. I won't even do a fecal test. Now, if there's other things going on with the stool, if it's soft, it's mushy, it's persistent, then yes, I might do a test just to make sure we don't have Giardia or another worm. If it's a brand new puppy coming from a shelter, then yeah, I will. But if it's a resident dog, been there for a while, and all of it shows up is with tapeworms, I'm going to treat the tapeworms. Don't waste your money on the fecal. I know my opponents are going to be yelling at me because they want the money. No, you don't need it. What I would do is the opposite. I would treat the tapeworms first. And when they go away and there's no other problem, you're good. If they go away and you're still having other issues, yes, then run a fecal test. All right. Boy, I love being controversial. I really do. My goal is to bring in the wisdom, bring in the common sense, and stop, I mean, for coming in and testing for these. That's why I get so angry at these emergency clinics. It's one thing to come in and treat the emergency, but to start running these tests for things that are so esoteric, things that probably a young doctor would see once in their career. What are you doing? Why are you wasting the money? Do it one thing at a time. Have a game plan. First, rule out. You can put your most common things first. Test for those and only those. Another thing that always bothers me, and I'm very vocal about it, as you can tell, and that is veterinarians that are collecting a urine analysis for a urine test. And they automatically add on a culture, which is more expensive than the darn urine test. And I'm thinking, why'd they run the culture? They haven't even gotten the urine test back yet. Wait, are there white cells? Are there bacteria? So traditionally what happens is you spend that extra $200+ on a culture instead of what we call urine MIC to test for bacteria and what antibiotic is best until you find out that there were no bacteria. There are no white cells. Now, what's the difference, really? What's the difference between waiting to get your basic UA, your analysis first, looking to see is it normal or not normal, and then say, yes, there are greater than 4 white cells per high power field. That's a significant diagnostic. Or there are bacteria, and the urine was collected through what we call cystostatesis. Then you call the lab. And I always draw 2 tubes, one for immediate, and one, we call it culture if. If we see greater than 4 white cells per high power field, if we see bacteria, we call the lab and say, remember that second tube? Go ahead and run the MIC. The owner already knows that that's going to be the plan, and they're prepared to pay extra if we need it. But to do it automatically without even getting your urine results back yet, that's highway robbery. So, and I see places doing this all the time. And guess what? Guess what comes back on the urine culture? No growth after 24 hours. No growth after 48 hours. Duh, I could have told you that. There were no bacteria in the urine. There were no white cells. There's no infection. So this is what drives me crazy. And this is why, I don't know, maybe this is why some of my colleagues hate my guts, but I'm just telling you, you got to be practical. As I said, there's a difference between academic medicine and practical medicine. And I am very, very happy to say my approach is always practical. I'm not going to start doing stuff just because the textbook says, oh, this could be. Now, if I have a urine-specific gravity, this is coming from my friend who's an internist, who I admire tremendously. He's a genius. That is, if you are suspecting some sort of urinary problem, but the urine comes back with a very low specific gravity, meaning it's very, very, very dilute, that it's very possible that you might have a bacteria, even though the urine was so dilute you just didn't see any, or same thing with white blood cells, then if you still are having issues, yeah, you might want to do the urine MIC. You might want to look for bacteria. You might find some. But that is the exception. But am I going to treat every cat and dog that I see with that exception? Heck no. I'm not paying for it. You're paying for it. So what I'm going to do is say, you know what? I hear it. And this is why I want to make sure that we're dealing with a problem that needs to be addressed. But I'm not going to search for a problem where the clinical signs aren't there, where even the tests aren't supporting it yet. So, you know, can you tell how agitated I get with this? And I see it all the time, and it drives me bonkers. I've had cases where I've actually challenged a veterinarian. I call them, especially if they're young. I try to be nice. I try to say, now, what were you thinking? Why did you do that test? Well, I say, no, that test is something you do after so-and-so. After, you don't just jump to take that test, because you'd gain nothing except money, and the client wasted money and still got no answers. So why'd you do that? And I'm trying to get veterinarians to think the way they would want to think. They would want, if they were novice, if they were not veterinarians and they were just pet parents and their vet did that to them, don't you think they'd be a little pissed? I think so. I'd be pissed. So anyway, thank you. Thank you, Sharon. She drives from Pasadena to Westwood to see me. No, I do appreciate it. Trust me, for all of you. And I got to tell you, the nicest thing is I will have clients that complain about my weight. Yes, there is a very long wait in my office. And not because the first thing I say is, trust me, I wouldn't be this busy if I was terrible. That's one thing. And secondly, I said, I also suffer from a disease that's called I can't say no disease. So when someone calls and needs to be seen, I am not one of those vets that said, well, God, you know, he's booked solid, but so we can see you next Monday. A Monday? That's a week away. I can't wait till Monday. If they come to me, I say, bring him in. Tell him it's going to be wait. Bring your laptop, bring a book, but I will not go home until I see you. And that's the culture that's in my hospital. And therefore, so even clients, new clients, well, I've had a couple of times this happen, which is kind of great. It's like a good pat on the back. But so they finally come and see me and they complain a little bit. It's always this way. Yes, I am sorry, but I'm pretty busy. Anyway, go through my exam, go through my questions. I give them the time that they need. And as they're getting ready to go, she'll turn around and say to me, just please tell me you'll never retire. So I guess it works. But my goal is I want to make sure that everybody gets the help they need. The pets are cared for. And I'm not one of those. How's Steve doing? I find out from somebody else. I'm a little mad at my sister, who a friend of mine says, oh, you know, Steve had his knee surgery. I go, wait a second. I never hear from my sister or from Steve, who's my high school classmate and friend. So anyway, how's he doing, Beth? Tell me. So there you have it. My opinions, sometimes good, sometimes a little controversial, sometimes you're not going to like, but I can tell you that's what you get. You get what you pay for, and you're not paying anything with this. So it is what it is. So anyway, here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, during the week. If you need to get a hold of me, easy to do. You can catch me here on Instagram. You can catch me on Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. You can get me at DrJeff.com. Many of you, I'm sure, have my cell phone because I hear from you. So you can always send me a text or a call. Anyway, love being here with you, helping you, answering your questions. And again, you don't have to wait till a Sunday during my show to ask me questions. You can reach me anytime. Would love to have a conversation. Missy, hello. Sorry you're late. Or else I would have, Missy, if you have any questions, you can always get a hold of me. As I said, Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, Dr. Jeff at DrJeff.com, Jeff at Airbed.com, whatever. We're here for you. And anytime you need to get a hold of me, do so. And yes, My Life with Corgis, thank you so much. Have a good Sunday to everybody. Have a great week. And we'll see you next time, next Sunday, here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.